When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
My name's Aditi.
And I'm Aiden.
And this is Banterly, the new podcast by Immigrantly, hosted by us, two Gen Z co-hosts.
Every week, we'll cover a set of TV shows or movies that all follow a particular theme. We'll be talking about sex, baby.
And also race.
Gender.
Representation in media, or the lack of representation.
We'll, of course, be talking about Miss Taylor Swift.
Ice Spice.
What's trending on the TikTok.
And we'll give our hot takes while unpacking the exciting and problematic elements of pop culture.
It's TV, it's movie, it's that celebrity gossip that's been going on. It's everything that a lot of our generation likes to hear about. And so it's just a space to have discussions that connect those fun things to like real world issues and cultural commentary on how our generation eats, sleeps, breathes, drinks, and...
dare I say, banters?
I like what you did there. Thank weaving
you.
It in.
There
I
you
like
go.
That.
A little something we'll do here on Banterly. Join us every Wednesday for pop culture takes, media critiques, and ultimately, and also most importantly, banter.
Banterly, available wherever you get your podcasts starting January 10th.
Welcome back to Immigrantly, the podcast that unravels the intricacies of diverse identities. I am Sadia Khan. Today, we are diving deep into the multifaceted world of beauty, both an intensely personal and profoundly public topic. From societal perceptions to self-reflection in the age of social media and video calls, the landscape of beauty has undergone a seismic shift.
This morning, an area plastic surgeon is seeing an increase in young brides and grooms coming in to transform to the best versions of themselves.
Ponsky says often people start with non-invasive procedures like Botox and fillers. But more patients are getting more invasive surgical procedures they've always dreamt of doing.
Once reserved for the elite, plastic surgery has become increasingly common, blurring the lines between celebrity and everyday life. According to recent data from the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, there were 26.2 million surgical and minimally invasive cosmetic and reconstructive procedures performed in the United States in 2022. Can you believe it? More specifically, there's been a 19% increase in cosmetic surgery procedures since 2019. Now, in a world where self-scrutiny is constant, have we become more conscious of our own uniqueness? Are we conditioned to view ourselves through an augmented lens, even in reality? Today, we'll unpack these questions and try to gain insights into the complex interplay of beauty, technology, and societal norms. I'm so excited to welcome Dr. John Mesa. He is a Colombian plastic surgeon who specializes in cosmetic surgery for the face, neck, and breasts. He's known as the king of buccal fat removal within the plastic surgery community.
Have you ever wanted a chiseled supermodel-like facial look? Let's talk about the new trendy procedure called buccal fat removal. Okay, imagine that you have those chubby cheeks. That's because there is a little party happening inside the cheeks because of the buccal fat pads. But there are some other people that...
So if you saw Miley Cyrus at the Grammys, you know what I'm talking about.
I didn't want to leave you, but had to. I didn't want to fight, but we did. Started to cry, then remembered, I just won my first Grammy!
I have so many questions for Dr. Mesa, and I can't wait for all of you to partake in this interesting conversation. So let's get started. Welcome to Immigrantly. I was expecting you in the studio today.
I'm sorry, I misread the email because usually on Tuesdays I'm seeing patients all day. It's impossible for me even to eat lunch.
I was almost freaked out when Jamie, who is your assistant, I believe, reached out and said that you won't be in New York today. And I was like, oh no, I am already at the studio. But everything is fine. We are having this conversation.
Yeah, no, I apologize because I have three offices and today I have to be in the New Jersey office in New York.
I am not going to lie to you. I was a bit nervous about seeing you in person. I mean, you're a plastic surgeon and it made me a bit conscious. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to sit across from a plastic surgeon. Does that happen to you often? Do people get conscious around you?
I mean, some people, yeah, feel conscious or intimidated, but I mean, there is nothing to worry about me. And I try to make the people feel happy with themselves. So it after one or 2 minutes, people realize, no, there is nothing to worry about.
Can I call you John?
Yes, please call me John. Yes, correct.
John, you grew up in Colombia. Let's go back to your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like growing up there?
I mean, I lived in Colombia. I mean, I was from a kind of middle-class family. I mean, we had limited resources. I mean, at some point when I was about 7 or 8 years old, my family moved to Venezuela because of the economical boom at that time. That was the oil boom in Venezuela. So my father found a job there. So, and then when I finished high school, I wanted to go to med school, but there were only two options. One, the private school where you needed to pay like a college kind of tuition, which was very expensive, or the free university, which was right on my alley. But the problem is that in order to be there, you need to survive. So my family couldn't support me. And I tried to find a job at the same time in Venezuela while going to med school. And it was impossible because everybody was looking for a full time. So I decided to go back to Colombia. And the reason is, one, because there was a free university, that is the one that I attended. And secondly, my uncle owned a store, and I was able to work evenings and weekends there. So they accommodate the schedule to me. So I was able to do med school at the same time that I was working. And that's why I was able to provide for myself and graduate from med school.
So you finished your med school in Colombia.
Correct.
And then you moved to the U.S. When did you decide to make that move?
When you are in med school, you realize that you cannot be a regular MD because nowadays everybody looks into specialization, so you need to do a residency. In my country, you go to the private school where you pay for the residency or you go to the free one. But the problem is that when you are in residency, you cannot work even in the evenings and weekends because it's a full time. It's like you live and breathe in the hospital. I was doing my research and I found out that in America, residents are paid to study. So when you come to the United States and you are a doctor in training, they pay you to be a trainee. So I said, okay, America is the way to go. So in my university, there was a scholarship to do the last year of medical school at either at Harvard or at Yale. And then I said, okay, that's my ticket to America. So for doing that, I needed to apply for the scholarship. It was very competitive because they only gave it to the two best students in the entire university per year. So I had to work my way to learn English. I had to do a lot of research, and then I needed to be one of the top in the class. So I got my ticket and I went to Harvard.
Why plastic surgery?
The reason plastic surgery is because I am a frustrated architect. I wanted initially to be an architect. But when I finished high school, my cousin, who was an architect, and her husband, who was also an architect, they went into bankruptcy. Because in the 90s, architecture was not a good career to make a living. So I was like, I'm not going to study something that is not going to give me a job. I need a paycheck. So then I was thinking, what is the next thing that I like? And the next thing was biology. By default, that ended up being medicine. So when I was in my last year of medicine, I started to look what specialty to do. I thought about cardiology. I thought about ophthalmology, dermatology, anything in medicine. And when I did my plastic surgery rotation, I realized that plastic surgeons are like architects of the body. So I was like, this is a win-win situation. And that's why I became a plastic surgeon.
Talk some more about that.
In plastic surgery, it's not just about the function. It's very important about the looks, the symmetry, the beauty. So that's all the same aspects that you do in architecture. When you are going to build up a building or a house, you need to make sure that the lines, some lines are straight, that you have symmetry, that there is a composition. And that's the same when you do in plastic surgery. Either you do breast, you do body. I specialize now in face. That's what I do. I need to make sure that the left and the right side looks better. And that's basically building up the face with architectural standards.
John, talk to me about beauty, because a lot of times we center all these procedures around the concept of beauty. And it's different for different people. It's different in different places, cultures. Can you define what beauty means to you?
Beauty to me means something that is attractive, that the person itself finds attractive to him or herself and other people finds attractive. But it's a relative concept. And I see it especially in America, because America, especially in New York or New Jersey or in Miami where I work, is a multicultural environment. So I see people from Asia, I see Latinos, I see whites. Everybody has a completely different definition of beauty. And that's why you need to adapt to those cultures and to those standards to kind of define what is beauty. For example, something that is very common, Asians versus Caucasians. In the Asian cultures, beautiful women are considered women that have a very thin, V-shaped, narrow lower face. While in the Caucasian world, now what is considered beauty is a more square, chiseled, more masculine, square jaw look.
You grew up in Colombia, right? How did you visualize beauty there? And how has that perception changed for you over the years?
Something that has kept on me is the principle of natural beauty. Because you see, nowadays in plastic surgery, there is a trend of overdoing things. Some things that are very grotesque, like a big lips, big cheeks, like a big boobs, big butt. No, when I was in Colombia, women are, especially women in Colombia, are very, very into beauty of plastic surgery. But the standards over there makes the people look very well without looking overdone. And that's something that I have brought to America, because people look at me as the surgeon is going to make them look beautiful, but natural at the same time. They know that with me, they're not going to get something overdone because it's not natural. That's, I think, what the inheritance or like the background of Colombia stays with me here in America.
In your opinion, why do people in America look for extreme measures, or why do they want to be overdone?
I think one is social media plays a big role. Anything looks really good in pictures. And when you put like a big lips in pictures versus regular size lips, of course, they're going to call more the attention of the viewer. But in person, they don't look nice. And unfortunately, there is a lot of practitioners, including plastic surgeons, that would do anything for money. And even if they don't, the result don't look natural or they look overdone. And that's the difference here in America. There is a lot of buying power, a lot of purchasing power, so people will do just that for money.
You're right. But what we've seen in the US as well, there was a time when plastic surgery was restricted to or confined to celebrities, right?
Mm-hmm.
So celebrities were the hallmark for beauty standards. They still are in many ways. But now we see it's become more ubiquitous in American society. People who are not as rich are able to afford plastic surgery. They are getting different procedures done. And there is this idea, as you said, of what they should look like based on how they look through social media filters, this augmented lens. Have you had any instances where somebody came to you with an ask and you talked them out of it?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
So how do you approach that?
I mean, I tell them that my job is to make them look more beautiful within what I consider natural standards. And I say, I don't do overdo people. And a lot of time I turn people away. I tell, especially in lips, you know, when you do lips, the idea is to, if somebody has a small lips or wants to have a little bit, or has normal lips and wants then a little bit more enhanced, they get a little bit swollen, significantly swollen, but then it goes down. And then they look really good. But then some people say, oh, I want more. More fillers. I like it when it was very swollen. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that because one, that kind of volume doesn't fit your face. Secondly, it's not going to make you look natural. Third, it's going to scream that you did bad plastic surgery. And fourth, and most important, I don't want my name attached to that. So I tell the patients, if you want it, you need to go to the guy next door because I'm not going to do it.
John, what impact do you think COVID and age of Zooms had on the increase of facial and body enhancements in our society? Because to me, it seems like because of Zoom and remote conversations, meetings, you and I are having this conversation remotely as well. People tend to see themselves a lot more.
That webcam sure can be unflattering. And that angle.
I would see myself. I'm like, you know, those lips aren't that cute.
There is this narcissistic element that has almost crept up on people, and they are so used to seeing themselves through this particular lens. They can point out to their facial uniqueness. I wouldn't call it imperfections because a lot of people may see that as imperfections. How do you see that shift happening since 2020?
Yeah, I mean, I think the pandemic, especially the Zoom effect, has affected the way that people see themselves and has had a big impact in plastic surgery. Why? Because now you get to see things that were present before there, but you didn't get to see them because you had like a random picture, a random Instagram picture here and there. But right now people see themselves in the camera all the time. And also if you're using a laptop, that the way that the angle of the camera looks at you is one of the angles that makes you look the worst. So people has become more aware. And additionally, you know, we live in a society that is very social media driven and very celebrity driven. So everybody wants to look like a celebrity. And why? Because it pleases them, they make them feel more confident, they feel them, make them feel like a more empowered to achieve their goals. And when they see in the camera that they are far away from that reality, right now, people have been realizing through social media and through the internet that you can literally look like a celebrity with plastic surgery procedures. So in the past, for example, I do a procedure that is very common, buccal fat removal. Who knew about that? Only celebrities. Only people in Hollywood, people in TV knew about that procedure. You got a little bit famous. You know, the first thing that you needed to do is to buccal fat removal. Nobody talked about that.
What is that?
The buccal fat removal is a plastic surgery procedure that removes the fullness of the lower anterior cheeks and decreases the chubbiness, and it makes you look more chiseled. I don't know if you saw the Grammys a couple of weeks ago and you saw the performance of Miley Cyrus. And in the Grammys, she looked very chiseled, like a supermodel. That's the result of buccal fat removal. So now people that is not in the celebrity world knows that you can achieve that look with plastic surgery. So now, because it became more common knowledge rather than a knowledge that was only excluded to the celebrities, people will say, okay, and now I can look like a celebrity. Let me do plastic surgery to achieve that goal.
I wonder how much these procedures age well. Something that people do earlier in life, again, removing fat, as you said, how would that impact how they look, say, later in life? Do you have those conversations with your patients as to what impact it would have, say, in the next 10, 20 years on their face?
You need to make sure that the patient is going to look always good now and in the future. And for example, in the case of buccal fat removal, I tell the key important thing is to have cheekbones, because high cheekbones is what maintains your face in a youthful appearance. But what happens with age is that the cheekbones starts getting smaller. And when they get smaller, the face sags and makes you look older. And that's what I tell patients, look at it. Usually our age 35 and older is when you start getting your cheekbones smaller. So that's why you need to start enhancing your cheekbones, usually with fillers. And I tend to look at, if you look at any celebrity that you like, especially females, and you look like at this angle, when you see a little bit the oblique view, you all see people with high cheekbones. Those cheekbones don't stay there forever when you're in the late 40s, 50s, and 60s, because you do plastic surgery, you do fillers. Some people put implants, but there is some maintenance. And if somebody wants to look like a celebrity after this kind of plastic surgery procedure, you need to do the maintenance that a celebrity will do to always look good.
It's 2011 and the Arab Spring is raging. A lesbian activist in Syria starts a blog. She names it Gay Girl in Damascus.
Am I crazy? Maybe.
As her profile grows, so does the danger.
The object of the email was, please read this while sitting down.
It's like a genie came out of the bottle and you can't put it back.
Gay Girl Gone. Available now.
You know what's fascinating to me is all of us have become so enamored by this idea of what we see on TV. Do you think we are losing our uniqueness? Because every human comes with unique features, and I am not against enhancements. I believe in looking your best at whatever age you are. I really, truly believe in that. I see so many people on TV looking the same to me, whether it's their lips, their cheekbones, their face overall. Don't you think that's taking away from the way humans are created?
I mean, I don't think that that's a problem strictly because of plastic surgery, but it's more like social dynamics. And it's because the social dynamics are very complex. And when you're in among people, you want to be feel included. You want to kind of follow kind of the trend of everything, you see. Right now, we are in the trend of plastic surgery. Everybody wants to look the same. But if we look in the early 2000s or in the 90s, plastic surgery wasn't a big thing. But what was the thing? It was clothes. So they were, remember, in the 70s, everybody looked like a hippie. Everybody dressed like a hippie. Then in the 90s, in Spanish called bota campana, when you have the jeans that they had, the lower part was very, very wide. Everybody had the same. Nowadays, everybody wants to go blonde. So everybody is blonde. An example of how social dynamics work, like a Kylie Jenner, there was an Instagram picture that she put her nails yellow. And then one of the Kardashian put in, and next week, everybody had that because everybody wanted to look the same. So it's not just the problem of plastic surgery, it's like the society. They want to be similar. And now we are in the age that is not just the clothing or the hairstyle. Now it's about the looks of your face and your body through plastic surgery.
Are there any specific ethnicities or gender groups that come more compared to others?
In America, I would say that it's all the same across the ethnicities. There is no one that does more than the other. I do a lot of Latinos, I do a lot of Middle Easterns, I do a lot of Russians, And I do a lot of black people, they all do plastic surgery. And in my practice, in my statistics, I cannot tell one ethnicity that's more than the other ones. I think they are all the same.
And what about gender dynamic? Do you see one gender more than others?
Oh, yeah. Always have been women. Women is like the workforce of plastic surgery because they are the ones that first, they look to improve themselves. And secondly, they don't have the taboo. Like men. Men, even nowadays, they still have a little taboo about, oh, men don't do plastic surgery. But now the trend has been changing where men are becoming more open and say, look, I want to improve my appearance the same way that women do. And now I have been seeing an increase in that. And especially because people knows nowadays that I specialize in men.
Yeah, but for women, I would assume there are so many societal pressures on women to look a certain way, right? Men are afforded that benefit of the doubt or, oh, you know, men aging, it's fine. Somehow society assumes that women should freeze in time and they should never age. And that's an unfair pressure on women to look a certain way. Do you think that plays a role in how conscious women are or female identifying folks are about how they look?
Yeah, because it has been always since centuries, since the foundation of human society, that always the women have the pressure to look more beautiful, pretty. That's why there is princess. I mean, how many movies in Disney are about princess? And how many movies are about prince? Almost zero.
I am still waiting for us to move away from this whole notion of princess and princesses. Are we still doing that? Anyways.
Yeah, no, I think that's going to take a long time for society to, you know, at least to do 50-50. It's going to take a long time.
So if somebody were to go to a plastic surgeon, what are some of the red flags that they should be on a lookout for?
I mean, first of all, you need to make sure that the plastic surgeon is board certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery, or they are board eligible. Why? Because that means that that surgeon has been trained with the minimal standards that is going to make sure that you're going to have a safe procedure. Secondly, now we are in the era of specialization. So the more you specialize in a surgery, the better the results, the better the outcome, the less the risk. So ideally, if you're in a big city, you can look for a surgeon that specializes in X procedure because very likely he or she does a lot of those ones. If you are in a smaller city, then you need to go to a general plastic surgeon because it's impossible to have a specialist in a small city. And third, you need to look at the before and after, make sure that what you see is what you would like to achieve for yourself. And also look at the reviews. Reviews is a way to kind of communicate how the surgeon performs. And most importantly is the vibe. You need to have a true believer of the gut feeling. If everything checks well, but if something said, no, this is not the right surgeon for me, I think you should go and look for a second or third consultation until you find the one that your gut feeling tells you, yes, he or she is the right person for me.
If you were to debunk one myth about plastic surgery, what would that be?
One myth, especially now talking about the trends and all the stuff, is about the surgery that I do the most, that is buccal fat removal will make you look older. That is a myth. Buccal fat removal is not going to make you look older. Actually, can make you look younger. Why? Because the older you get, the chubbier you get, the heavier, bottom heavier your face looks, the more square you look, and that makes you look older. When you get the procedure, it makes you look younger because you have less fullness in the lower face. It gives you a more V-shape that is associated with youthfulness. But the key is the cheekbones. If you have high cheekbones, you always will look younger with buccal fat removal, no matter what age in your life. Problem is when you do the surgery in somebody that doesn't have high cheekbones, that's when you look older, and that's where the misconception, that's where the myth comes from. But if you have high cheekbones, you are not going to look older with buccal fat removal.
Oh, John, that's a lot of work. Why can't people accept age? Again, I'm not saying that you should not look good at that particular age. That is important. Why don't we say things like, you know, looking good at a certain age rather than looking younger?
I think is, and I'm living in myself, is because your body ages faster than your mind. And there is a disconnection. And you always want to be in sync with the way that you feel inside. I see it by myself. I'm in my late 40s. And I see that some parts of my face are getting older than I feel. I feel like early 30s. For me, that's my point of view. When you are not in sync, your facial and body structure doesn't sync chronologically with the age that you feel, that's when you look plastic surgery.
So there's a question that I ask all my guests in the end, and I'm really curious to get your answer. Define the United States of America to me in the context of beauty.
I mean, United States, I would say that in the context of beauty, is a country that sets standards because they have the power from the knowledge of plastic surgery, the innovations, the machinery, and the monetary power to create and innovate. So for me, they are the ones that put the standards in the world in beauty.
That makes sense. John, this was so good. And who knows? I may show up at your office one day. You live in New York. I live in New York. Why not? But this was wonderful. Is there a website people can go to if they want to reach out to you?
Yeah, it's very simple. My website is my last name, drmesa.com. Either DR, the contraction DR Mesa, or doctor spelled out, drmesa.com.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you to you. I feel very honored and privileged that you invited me to attend your podcast.
Look, I believe in feeling good about yourself. Whatever works for you is what you should do. But I do have a problem with unattainable beauty standards. I do have a problem with filtered lens. And don't get me wrong, I've used filters. I do think that at some point I may just even indulge in some plastic surgery. I'm not denying that. But we should try to accept and celebrate our uniqueness as we look to enhance ourselves through whatever makes us us. This episode was produced by me, Sadia Khan, written by Adiba Hussain and me. The editorial review is done by Shay Yu. Our sound designer and editor for this particular episode is Hazik Ahmed Farid. Theme music for Immigrantly is done by Simon Hutchinson. Come back next week when we have another interesting conversation. And if you have any thoughts on this episode, send me a voice memo, write to me, ping me, DM me. Would love to hear your thoughts. Take care and be kind to yourself.